City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Peter Maverick.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This Queer Cast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Always worth it. American Airlines, offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Broadway in Chicago and Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. For the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com. Listening to the Windy City Queercast show number 123. I'm Amy Matheny, and wow, we're having a very special week, aren't we, here at the Windy City Queercast. Earlier in the week, you heard Peter talking to me. This is the week of Windy City Queercast Intimate Portraits. And today's show, we get to know Peter Maverick, just as maybe you got to know a little bit about Amy Matheny in our show earlier in the week. But Peter has been in London. I have been oh so lonely without him here, but today it's all about the man. So we are going to conjure him here and sit down a spell. And usually there's warm biscotti or something piping hot and baked and sweet and delicious in the house for me when I'm, you know, our studio is in Peter's home, and we're at the corner of Gay and Gay is normally where we are recording most of these podcasts. Unless you can tell, we're in a coffee shop or we're in a restaurant or out on the street. So Peter is very generous in that he opens up his home to creating a wonderful environment of aromas and kitty cats and good technology, because, oh, my place is not about good technology. I do want to let you know that you will hear news in this show, our news of the week. You'll also hear our advertisers, what's going on in the theater scene around Chicago, if you happen to live in the Chicagoland area, and also Jerry Potter with Jerry Potter's Picks. So Peter Maverick is the male host of Windy City Queercast, having previously hosted with me on Windy City Radio. He also is host of his own very intimate podcast and very personal and very fun podcast at RadioPeter.com. And if you don't subscribe to that, go there right now. What are you doing? Go there right now. RadioPeter.com. Subscribe. He is a former columnist with Life in 4/4 for Night Spots magazine. Many have danced to his unique and uplifting groove as he DJed at Spin Nightclub for many years. Fluent in many languages and living life with copious amounts of energy, that is Peter Maverick. He is a sponge where life is concerned. He lives his life positively, passionately, fully present, out and proud. And I'm proud to call him my friend, and I'm glad he's sitting here with me. Hey, Peter.
Hey, I'm going to gush. You're my PR agent. I'm hiring you.
That was fabulous.
I love to PR you.
Oh, can I just transcribe that? That'll be my whole
PR
website.
PR the PM.
Yay.
PR, baby. How Yay. Are you? How's London? London calling.
Fabulous.
Have you spent lots of time in London prior to this week?
I have on 2000... in the 2000 turn, so in 1999, I went out there at the bank that I work for, mm-hmm. and I was out there for Y2K. So I never imagined in my wildest dreams that I was going to be out there when the year 2000 was coming, that I was going to be like on London Bridge with a bottle of champagne in each hand going, right, bloody hell, the fireworks are burning my eyes.
Wow.
So yeah. So I actually did have a chance to go out there and spend 2 weeks and work out there and play out there pretty hard, because at that time the expense accounts were pretty big. So
wow.
Yeah, it was a good time.
I am so on the first of my agenda for the fall is to try to make a trip to London. So I will get all your notes.
Yes, absolutely.
Because I know you will make them, or you'll blog them, or you will podcast them, or you will something them. It will be easy for me to know everything you do.
Borrow my Lonely Planet guide, and I can get you around the city, and it's easy. It's just deathly expensive. Beware.
So, Peter, where were you born?
I was born born in Park Ridge, Illinois, which is just a hop, skip, and a jump away from my parents' house. I was born at what was the name of that? You know, I just got my birth certificate too. I can't remember what the name of it is in Park Ridge, but yeah. So I'm a Chicago native though. I always lived in the city. I was always raised in Chicago.
And do you feel like a city boy at heart?
I do, 100%. Every time I go somewhere else, I think it's because I've only ever lived here. Every time I go somewhere else, I'm constantly comparing it to Chicago. I try not to be negative about it, but yeah, I'm an urban person. I have to see all the colors of the rainbow. I get nervous when there's all white people around me.
Yeah.
Like when I'm on a train and they all look similar to me, It makes me very unsettled.
Well, now Hillary Clinton is from Park Ridge as well.
She
right?
is.
So that will give some people who don't live in the Chicago area an understanding of kind of the community.
Right. So it's the far northwest corner of the city. So when you're heading on the Kennedy toward the airport, You pass right by all that. So you pass right by my parents' house. They live right off the Kennedy at Harlem Avenue. And then you keep going. You eventually end up in O'Hare.
Excellent. So, yeah. Now tell me, you are an only child?
No, I'm not.
No?
I am the baby of two.
There you go.
So I have two older sisters, and between me and my sister, there's 7 years. So I was kind of the, oops, surprise. They got the formula finally right. Yep. And I think my mother, after I plopped out at a healthy 10 pounds, 14 ounces, I was a big baby.
Yeah.
She said, tie the tubes, I'm done.
Oh, well, that's so good. Yeah. See, you're just like me, because mine was 7 years, too, between my sibling. And it was a similar kind of thing, you know?
It's a weird disconnect, because I had to assimilate not only what their pop culture was, but what mine was. Because that 7 years means they're conscious enough to be all up in the Electric Company and all kinds of pop music and everything. So it was a really weird relationship. I'm a little nervous about having the micro. I mean, seriously, this is weird. I'm usually the one X-ing the question.
So tell me about a favorite childhood memory that would just tell us a little bit about a moment in Peter's life. Like, what was a typical day? What really kicked up your skirt as a kid?
Well, and literally kicked up my skirt. You kind of hit the nail on the head. So I went to, during the summertime when I wasn't in school, I went to day camp at the local park. It was Oriole Park. And day camp was basically divided into two sections. There were the older boys group or the younger boys group you could be in. And it just depended on your age range. And basically, you just hung out with these kids all summer during the day. And you did stuff around the park district. You went to pools. You went on field trips. You did activities, crafts, and whatnot. Sports, which I was always horrible, horrible at. But every year at the end of day camp, they had a big talent show. So what, you know, and I am a child of, I was born in 77. So, you know, the 80s this was ripe in the 80s, all kinds of stuff going on in there. And We Are the World happened to be the popular song at the time. So we decided as a group, as the older, I think it was still in the younger boys. Now, I may have just made the older boys. I may have just gotten, I think the
cutoff
was like
13. You'll always be a younger boy, Peter.
Something like that. But, you know, in We Are the World, there are many female singers, aren't
right.
there?
Mm-hmm.
So I was nominated pretty quickly to sing both the Tina Turner part and the Cyndi Lauper part. So I had this costume that was sort of half Cyndi Lauper, half Tina Turner. When I turned one way,
it's kind of gay and fierce.
Yeah, it was. It was just like two gay icons right away. And I knew what was going on then, but it was just fabulous. But it was so cool because it was like a half and half costume. So when I turned one way, I had dark makeup on and I was Tina Turner. And when I flipped the other way, and I thought that up myself.
You are such a theatrical kid. I want to see pictures
up the
of
skirt.
That.
There actually aren't any.
Oh,
there are no pictures that I have. Maybe some of the people that I don't hang out with them. But
I was going to say we have to post those alongside.
No,
this.
I wish I had them. They would be on my website now on Radio Peter, I promise. But yeah, so that was me, the creative little kid. But, you know, I didn't play sports. I played music. So,
well, I was going to ask, you know, because you're a DJ and I always look to you for things musical, and you have kind of a wonderful.
You flatter me so much. I love you.
Well, you have a wonderful, I mean, you know, we know this about you. If we listen to the music that you get really excited about, you know, there is a similar theme of music. Yeah. Like, you are not of that. Is whatever you say, that depressing kind of drug culture, music, drony kind of stuff. But
you
got something that's got a little something, you know, unique and some flavor and uplifting and a message. So what was it that started this love of music for you? Was there music in your family, or just having sisters and playing music, or?
All the above. Well, my mother met my father. The rumor goes that my mother met my father, and I haven't gotten them inebriated enough to get the full story yet. But the rumor is that my father was a bouzouki player in a nightclub, and that's how my mother met him.
A bouzouki player?
Yeah, bouzouki is like a Greek banjo. It looks like you cut an olive in a half and put stick on it.
Okay.
And it's got a real twangy sound. It's got the twangy
banjo.
Banjos. Yeah, banjo came from bouzouki, actually. Mandolin and all that stuff came from these Eastern Europeans.
Ah.
You ever seen the Russian, like the big triangle thing and everything? All those are, it's from the same, they're double stringed.
Okay.
So they're real clangy and twangy, and they cry a lot because you can make them cry. So my father was a pretty proficient bouzouki player when he was in the States at that time. And my mother met him then. So I was kind of born into music.
Yeah.
My father has always played instruments, the guitar, the bouzouki. In fact, we're looking for to buy a bouzouki for me now. It's the most horrible purchasing experience I've ever gone through. But
that's a hidden secret.
Yeah, but music
help
was
Peter
always my
find
life.
His bouzouki.
Seriously.
That's just a...
Truly, I truly
that's
mean
a bumper
that.
Sticker.
If you can help me find a bouzouki, I will pay you good money because I know next to nothing about them. And we're learning right now.
Right.
But yeah, I started piano when I was 4. And piano lessons were really laborious at the time, but I was also singing in the church choir, and it all just sort of, music always swirled around me. It was always in the house. There was always something going on. Piano lessons were mandatory, and I kind of hated them in the beginning, but then by the time I got later to about seventh and eighth grade, some girls that I knew, because I went to a magnet high school and went to school with people all over the city,
right.
And some girls from the Southwest side had some house records, because during gym class, the gym teacher, Mr. Pesci, said, "I want you to bring in your own music, because we're gonna do exercises to your music." He goes, "That's the only way I'll get you to move. So bring in your music, bring in cassettes, bring in." Of course, I got in trouble for bringing in "I Want Your Sex" by George Michael one time. But this girl Lorraine brought in a stack of house records, and I had never. It was like, you know, I had been to a gospel church early on, and I all of a sudden I heard gospel music and dance beats all at once, and the hair stood up on the back of my neck and on my arms, and I was like, "This is it. This is what I love. This is what I'm going to dedicate myself to learning about." And then I used to get busted at night because I had a little pocket transistor radio, and I would lay with it against the pillow. And in Chicago, clubs like The Warehouse and everything would broadcast live from the nightclub, so you could hear what the DJs were throwing. And Chicago, it was all sort of happenstance, because Chicago house culture was just starting to bloom at that time. And people were literally walking into the DJ with a new record or a new cassette, handing it to them, and it was turning around and getting played right on the radio for us.
So people think about like New York as being, you know, the limelight years of being more
the garage
that,
years.
Or the garage years.
Yeah.
But you're saying that Chicago really had a very influential.
Yeah, we were doing it at the same time, and you know, it's called house music because of the warehouse here in Chicago that Frankie Knuckles ran. I mean, he basically was the DJ. He was the shit, and he was the badass motherfucker who had all the great records and all the great connections. And that's why we call it house music today. Garage house came from, you know, Larry Levan and all them out in New York doing all that garage music out there. So yeah, I was so blessed to be caught up in. I wasn't going to the clubs because I was way too young,
right.
But I could still hear the music, and you could hear it somehow in the music that it was so inclusive, that it was everybody, that it wasn't, you know, house culture has in the beginning especially was everybody. It was gay, black, white, pink, yellow, green, blue, trans, everybody
right.
was hanging out, dancing to house music because it had messages of love and happiness and overcoming badness and not being upset that you were stuck in a rut, just saying, you know, keep on keeping on, keep on moving, don't stop. No, all these good messages, and everybody was really, ascribing to it, not just subscribing to it. They were really a part of it.
Yeah.
So I was lucky enough to kind of get caught up in that really.
And did
early.
You have a mentor? I mean, how did you move into actually DJing and getting your own vinyl and because that's, you have to get your turntables and it's expensive, and how did that whole process happen?
It is
you?
And I truly believe that a DJ does not make himself. I believe I'm kind of old school in that someone does have to bring you in and induct you and show you how to do it, because I can go to a club and I can hear the difference between people who someone showed them how to do it and new people. And I was lucky enough at the time to be hanging out at Cocktail a lot because there was a DJ named Timmy Loop. Timmy Loop also spun at Spin, and I met Timmy Loop at Spin because I was working at Spin, friend of a friend connection. I started videotaping the shower contests.
Mm-hmm.
So Timmy was playing these thumpy, thumpy beats that I recognized instantly because I knew the house music, but I didn't know who they were by. You got to remember, when you're listening to a DJ set, they know, and next up we'll have the...
Right, it's not like Casey Kasem's American Top 40.
Right, we're talking club DJs. The needle goes on the record, and for the next 6 hours, you don't hear it stop. stop. It just keeps going and going and going. So Timmy was, I started asking questions. I said, whoa, what, ooh, what record? Girl, I know that record. Girl, tell me about that record. What, who is she? Who's that singing? Who's that big girl singing? I can hear she's a big girl, isn't she? And over time, we just developed this rapport. And he's like, you know a lot about house music. He goes, but you don't know a lot about house music. I was like, yeah, it's this weird thing. I grew up listening to it on the radio and everything. He's like, well, girl, have you ever spun records? I was like, what do you mean, girl? What do you mean spinning records? What do you mean, girl? I don't know how to do that. Because that's how Timmy talks. Everything's a girl. If a record, she's too slow. Speed her up. That's just how he talks.
That's kind of where you got some of that.
Yeah, that's where I got all of it, basically. So he was like, girl, well, come over, girl. Come over, girl. We'll spin some records. And he actually taught me how to spin. Huh. And about 6 months later at Cocktail one Thursday night, he was like, well, girl, here's the records, girl. Go ahead. And I spun this incredible record. And all of this is on Radio Peter, blah, 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 blah. But it was just this incredible record that sort of meant everything to me at the time. It's a record called Forever by Sandy Alvarez. And it was just about how I was feeling about the music. And I was so in love with it. And I was starting to meet people in the queer community and make good, solid, strong friends. And it was just, it was just the right place at the right time. I met Timmy. And then Timmy got sick 2 weeks in a row, and I covered for him twice at Spin, and they told him not to come back the next week.
So
the guy who taught me how to DJ, I actually took his job.
Wow.
And I didn't take it on purpose, but they were like, we love your energy, we like it, come on. And so that kind of, yeah, I lost a lot of friends in Chicago.
Yeah.
And I kind of got blacklisted. And to this day, I still have trouble with that whole slice of gay Chicago, because they don't want to hang out with me.
Yeah.
Because they're like, girl, you stole her job. And in fact, that's what happened on Wednesday night at Spin when they moved me from Fridays to Wednesdays. They fired the Wednesday DJ and moved me into there. And then they were like, girl, you took her job. I was like, I did nothing. I was good. Sue me. You know, I'll be conceited right now and say I'm a good DJ.
Yeah.
But I was good. And that's why they chose me. Not because I wasn't coming for nobody's job. I got a day job. I
try to make money.
So yes, it was a weird, that was really long winded. I'm sorry.
But. No, it's good. It's good. And you know, well, they may have not want to spend time with you, but we do. We're going to take a really quick break. That's the man behind the music. There's so much more.
Yay.
And we're going to take a quick break and do some news and some commercials and listen to Jerry. And then we'll be back with more with Peter Maverick. Windy City Queercast, Intimate Portraits.
The overture begins. The music swells. You're swept away to the Piazza Michelangelo to discover the light in the piazza. Broadway's most romantic new musical in years and the winner of 6 2005 Tony Awards. As if by fate, a sudden gust of wind blows the hat from a beautiful young woman into the grasp of a handsome young Italian, and it begins. The passion, the romance, Broadway's ultimate love story. The Light in the Piazza. Critics have hailed it a must-see, a consummate work of beauty, with the most romantic score of any Broadway musical since West Side Story.
The Light in the Piazza.
It won the critics. It won the Tonys. Now let it win your heart. The Light in the Piazza.
This romantic new musical is now playing at the Auditorium Theater through July 22nd. For tickets, call 312-902-1400 or visit BroadwayInChicago.com.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Edible Underwear Maker.
Mr. Edible.
Your true genius combined two of man's favorite things, panties and food.
I can taste it now.
They're a snack. They're underwear. They're a snack and underwear. Brilliant.
Two treats in one.
Gorgeous grape. Rock my world raspberry. Bodacious banana.
26 flavors.
And nothing says, I want you like a man with a mouthful of underpants.
I want you, baby.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, Mr. Edible Underwear Maker. Because thanks to you, when it comes to panties, extra large means extra yummy.
Yummy, yummy, yummy.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of July 16th, 2007, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Looking Glass Alice is playing now at its home at Looking Glass Theater Company in the Water Tower Waterworks after an East Coast tour. Adapted by David Catlin from Lewis Carroll's Alice's Adventures in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass, Looking Glass Alice is an acrobatic and dizzyingly playful show for all ages. Variety called it extraordinary. For tickets, call 312-337-0665 or visit lookingglasstheater.org.
Northwestern University presents three new musical theater events at its Summer Music Theater Festival. The festival's featured musical, In the Bubble, directed by Michael Greif, director of Rent on Broadway, is playing July 27th through August 12th. Don't miss this funny and touching coming-of-age story that captures the pull between safety and growth and the risks that accompany change. Tickets start at only $25. Call 847-491-7282 or visit tic.northwestern.edu.
Hey, pigs! The love goddess Judy Tenuta comes to Chicago for one night only, July 28th at the Lakeshore Theater, 3175 North Broadway. Buy your tickets now for either the 7 p.m. or the 9:30 p.m. show on the 28th. The love goddess will delight, play accordion, and make you a slave to her world. For tickets to Judy Tenuta, call 773-472-3492 or visit lakeshoretheater.com.
And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com. And this is your Windy City Queercast News.
In Florida, a bipartisan organization made up primarily of heterosexuals has put together over $1 million in 2 months to fight a proposed anti-same-sex amendment to the state's constitution. The group, Florida Red and Blue, is led by Bob Farmer, a former treasurer for the Democratic National Committee, and John Kislak, the former financial director for Republican Attorney General Bill McCollum's campaign.
And in Fort Lauderdale, city commissioners have agreed to make space in a city building for a gay interest library, the Stonewall Library, over Mayor Jim Noggle's objections. He's all over the news. Noggle, who was outvoted, said, quote, "I feel troubled that a city building would be housing materials with content we have arrested people for in the past."
Ugh. In Virginia, Thomas Donovan is fighting the state's Workers' Compensation Commission for his partner's death benefits. Philip Pettis worked as a mechanic but suffered a severe back injury in 2001 and died in 2004. Donovan, who suffers from diabetes and chronic fatigue syndrome, depended on Pettis financially. Lambda Legal, who is representing Donovan, has appealed to the Virginia Court of Appeals.
UPS has decided that a New Jersey gay couple will not get the same benefits as a couple married in Massachusetts. Reportedly, the company's decision boiled down to the word spouse, which New Jersey does not use for its couples that are joined in a civil union.
Harlow Quadra and Joseph Kirekis will be extradited from Virginia Beach, Virginia to Philadelphia to face charges of murdering gay porn producer Brian Charles Cochis. Cochis was the owner of a gay adult film company called Cobra Video. Authorities say that Quadra and Kirekis killed him to eliminate a rival.
In Chicago, the New Life Shelter, a place for the homeless, has agreed to no longer practice sexual orientation discrimination, and that employees would undergo sensitivity training after Michelle Wang said that she was denied entry because she's a lesbian. Earlier this year, the ACLU of Illinois filed an official complaint with the city's Commission on Human Relations.
The Iranian government has confirmed that a man was executed by stoning last week for committing adultery, and that 20 more men would be executed for everything from rape to homosexuality. During a crackdown in May, Iranian police arrested about 1,000 people.
Out actor Neil Patrick Harris, star of TV's How I Met Your Mother, is in talks to voice The Flash in the upcoming movie Justice League, The New Frontier. In addition, Harris recently taught a master class at Tampa, Florida's Broadway Theater Project, a musical theater arts education program for high school and college students.
Nick Starchevic, a former pro football player currently on TV's Big Brother 8, has admitted to some same-sex action and has committed some on the show as well. Starchevic recently said that on the show that he has performed oral sex on a guy. In addition, he has been spotted spooning Joe, one half of the gay former couple that is also competing on the show. Is he merely working an angle, or is there more than meets the eye?
And Tori Spelling can now officiate weddings, having been certified online. Recently, Spelling officiated at a same-sex union at the B&B. She and husband Dean McDermott run in their series Tori and Dean in Love.
Yuck, yuck, yuck. Wah, wah, wah. And that's your Windy City Queercast News.
Try. And I'm sitting down on this Windy City Crickcast intimate portrait with Peter Maverick. So we talked about music. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about another big passion in your life, which is travel.
No, I think you say sex.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk about that too.
Oh, yay.
That's the last thing we're talking about.
I got to keep you holding on. That's the bumper. Literally.
So how many languages do you speak? Or just name them.
English, Elinico, Greek, Espanol, Spanish, Nihongo, Japanese, and I'm currently studying Mandarin Chinese. Zhonggol.
Do you speak French, Italian, any of those?
No, but I can understand
romantic
them.
Languages.
I can, if you can speak Greek and English, you can understand the romance languages.
Yep.
Vous voulez français, je ne parle français, but I can make an accent. I can fake it real
right,
good.
Right.
But no, so it's kind of when you learn all the Greek mechanics of language, you're like, oh my God, these people took everything from the Greeks, including most of English language. So.
Now, why
and
language?
Spanish.
What is it about language that gets you off?
I grew up bilingual.
You grew up bilingual.
My father is an immigrant to this country. So my father came off the boat from Greece. But like I said, I was the last of the three children. So by the time I came along, mom was speaking like a Greek, cooking like a Greek. And I basically grew up in a Greek household in America. A lot of the stuff that you saw in the movie, My Big Fat Greek Wedding, was my life when I was growing up. So a lot of those kinds of experiences, hanging out with a lot of Greek families, hanging out with a lot of ethnic families. My father was in the restaurant business. So naturally, that kind of blue collar work meant that you dealt with a lot of the I don't want to call them minorities. I want to say ethnicities in Chicago.
Yeah.
So I always grew up, you know, when I was a baby, you could yell at me in English, but if I got in a lot of trouble, you started yelling at me in Greek.
In
and
Greek.
That's how I knew, oh shit, I'm in big trouble.
When was the first time you went to Greece?
1992. I've only been twice.
Okay.
1992.
One of the biggest traveling trips? I mean, farthest away you went at the youngest age or?
No. I had gone to Mexico much younger than that and watched my sister get sick with Montezuma's Revenge and my parents arguing with immigration about getting her back across the border because she was in a stretcher.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, no, we were a traveling family. We traveled a bit. I had never been to Europe, though.
Uh-huh.
So that was my first time in Europe, but we traveled a lot around the States. But yeah, I went there in 92 and then I went back in 93 and I had the good fortune to spend about a month and a half each time there. So I basically lived in Greece. It's the only time I've ever been away from Chicago for so long.
Two favorite cities in the United States that you've visited that you would go back to?
Can I not say Chicago?
Not say Chicago.
Okay.
We know we all love Chicago. We live here.
Two favorite cities. Number one, Las Vegas.
Yep.
Because it's so over the top and, you know, my love of all the colors of the rainbow. You see every kind of person and you hear every kind of language on the street.
Yeah.
Second city is difficult. That's hard because I like the South for what it is, but I like the Northeast for what it is, and I like the Northwest for what it is, and I like the Southwest. But I think I'd have to pick somewhere in the Southwest. I don't know that I can name a definite city.
Yeah.
But somewhere in the Southwest, and I know that's where you know Las Vegas is, but just the landscape there is so different than the city, and it looks so different.
I know
than
you
where
love the desert.
From.
We were talking about that in a previous show.
Yeah.
So now, where have you not traveled to on the globe that you want to go?
I want to go to Greenland, Iceland, to the cold countries. I want to go to the Ice Hotel. I think that'll be fabulous.
Yeah.
But South Asia really intrigues me, and I would like to visit India and Tibet. Mm. In fact, I would like to align my life so that I can spend a month probably traveling, maybe a month and a half traveling through there, as well as I need to get to Machu Picchu. I need to get to South America. I think I'm just going to name every continent because I also want to go to Australia. I want to go to a lot of places. I think South America will probably be the first one that I actually get to because I can navigate my way through places speaking Spanish.
Yeah.
So I think that'll be a little bit easier. But I took an Andean studies course in college and that just, it whet my appetite and I started studying more and more and more about it. And it's just a fascinating culture. I mean, the fact that human life was so sacred to them that they would sacrifice people.
Yeah.
You know, sacred, sacrifice. How close are those words? So, yeah.
Sack.
it's weird. It's a weird culture and it's fascinating. It's something I'd like to see the remnants of. So,
let's talk about when you first knew you were gay. Did you always know?
Yeah.
When do you have your first memory of being gay?
I did not know the word. So I knew I was gay, but I didn't know what you called it. I knew that I always hung out with the little girls and we talked about the little boys.
You do?
Yeah, always. Always. I always knew that happened. And I didn't know what that meant. And I didn't know why I found kinship with the girls.
When did
easier.
You know? High school? Because you started sexual activity with before. Men pretty young.
Yeah. So it was about fifth grade. That's when I really, you know, I got an encyclopedia.
Yeah.
And then I got my greedy little hands on a DSM-3 at the time.
What is that?
The diagnostic manual for psychiatrists.
There you go.
So I started flipping around in that and was like, it's a disease? Mm. No, it's not a disease.
Did you struggle with it? Did you feel bad about it when you were young?
No, no. And I'll tell you why I didn't feel bad about it. Because I didn't, you know what I struggled with? Dating girls.
Mm. Keeping and, up that front. Yeah. Or just doing that societal.
Just trying it, you know, because there never was a front. I think, you know, talking to so many of the people that I have at my high school reunion, well, in high school, I was pretty much out, so that doesn't count. But over time, you know, MySpace brings people together. And talking with some people, they're like, oh God, we knew. Yeah. We just weren't talking about it. And nobody was really thinking about it.
Right.
But I remember my first boy crush. And I remember my first girl crush. I was crushed out on two different people. And it was at two different, you know, places and two different times. But I just always remember hanging out with the girls, talking about the boys, looking at the boys.
Yeah.
Not if I had friendship with a guy, it was because I wanted much more than friendship. And yeah. I don't mean sexually. It's just I wanted to be intimate with this person and I didn't understand
close
how.
And, yeah.
Yeah. And I could always find that intimacy with women. And in fact, many of them, or girls, many of them mistook it for something completely different.
Sure.
Sorry, honey, we ain't doing that.
Because you're a cutie patootie and I'm sure they were all into you. Yeah. And you were kind and sensitive and talented and creative and...
I blame it on being an Aquarius. So. It's just me. I do a little bit of everything.
So how did you, you did not go to college.
I went to college for 3 semesters.
For 3 semesters.
But I did not graduate from college.
You did not graduate from college. So you dropped out. What was going on in your life at that time? I mean, I know you have a history of, you kind of say, I played the gay scene hard. You're kind of the both sides now guy to me.
Yeah.
What was that time like for you and why were you playing it hard and why were, you know, the drugs and the sex and the clubs and all that? Why was that? Why
that was actually,
doing it for you?
That was actually a lot of that started after college.
Uh-huh.
So, was
that relevant to why you dropped out of college?
No. It was almost the precursor. No. Well, okay. So let me back up a minute. In high school, I had some real dark times in my life and I got real suicidal and it was really ugly for a little bit. And then when I got to the flip side of all that, when I got on the other side and I finally realized, wow, this is really a place I do want to be. Cause I was just pulling myself in a lot of directions, trying to figure out how I could be gay or how I could be straight or how I could be happy or how I could be sad. I didn't know. And I was like, ugh, fuck it. I just need to be done with this. You know,
yeah.
Oh, look, a solution.
So it was your sexuality. Your sexuality was causing you to struggle at that time.
Yeah,
it was suicidal and kind of struggle with that.
It was, but that all happened in high school.
Right.
So when I got on the other side of that, I realized that, you know what? Every day is a blessing. Sheryl Crow, every day is a winding road. Every day is something new. And here I was sitting in class and I tried to sit in class for 2 whole semesters. And then I was sitting in class in the 3rd semester and was like, life is moving around out there. Life is happening out there. And I'm sitting in a class learning shit that I already know that I was getting fabulous. I got straight A's. I got fabulous grades until obviously the semester I dropped out. And I got fabulous grades and was like, this is all work that's beneath me. Life is going on. How do I get out into life? Well, to get out into life, what do you have to do? You have to have a place on your own. You have to be able to afford your bills. You have to be able to pay rent. So, through a lot more happenstance, again, right place at the right time, I managed to get a job with Walgreens corporate. And that was my meal ticket out of my parents' house. And then sort of dropping out of college was also moving out of mom and dad's house. It was cutting off all those things.
No rules, no restrictions.
Yes. Yes. So that,
and you're gay and you're living in Chicago.
Right. Well, I was gay and living in Palatine for a year.
Okay.
So that's when I started I would visit the city to be gay and the scene and everything. And I had just around that time, before I left the house, I had finally come out to my parents. They were the last people in the world on earth, probably the first ones to know, but they were the last ones I told.
Right.
So I started coming out when I was 15 and it wasn't until about 3 or 4 years later, probably about 18, 19, that I really came out to my parents. And I really led
still
them all
very
out.
Young.
Yeah. At
very
the time,
young for a lot of people. I mean maybe for, not for people who are listening
for
to
that
our
era,
podcast,
right.
But yeah.
For that period of time, absolutely.
Yeah.
I came out as a sophomore in high school.
Yeah.
But so it wasn't until I moved to the city, which was a year after I'd been out of my parents' house, which is when I started living a little hard.
Yeah.
And
was that just because that's the train that everybody was on and you just wanted to get on board?
It's the only train I saw.
Right.
It's not that because everybody's doing it, you have to do it. It's because there's no alternative. There was no objectively presented alternative. Mm-hmm. You know, who were the queer guys that were on Halsted? Who are the queer guys in Chicago? Well, let's just put it that way. Who are the queer guys in Chicago? Oh, the queer guys walking around on Halsted.
Right.
You know, where were the gay boys? Oh, they're on Halsted.
Right.
Where were the cool people? Oh, they were in the clubs.
Right.
You know, and I had been doing drag to get in the clubs because I wanted to get in the life. And that had actually started a little before. That was still when I was in Palatine. That was even before I moved out of my parents' house. I was trying to get out into the scene, but I had seeped myself into the scene and I had been coming out in the neighborhood. I mean, 15, we'd been coming out here after school and I knew what was going on and I wanted to get more and more embedded in it. So always my thing is I got a goal and I got to get to it. How do I get there? How do I do it? And it just, I knew I wanted to be a part of this community. What I didn't know was that you didn't have to drink a lot and do drugs and work out all the time and wear fabulous clothes and be fabulous to be a part of the community.
Yeah.
That's the reality check. And I was so lucky that I learned that early.
Yeah.
So lucky that I learned that early, because by the time I was 21 and 22 and I was ready for the community, I was as stable as can be.
Huh.
Compared to a lot of 21-year-olds who were just coming out for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
Who were just hitting the scene, compared to a lot of 40-year-olds who were just hitting the scene for the first time. So I was very fortunate to do a lot of this, what I call like gay grunt work. I did it early.
But was there a moment? Was there the moment that you woke up and you were like, I'm not doing this anymore?
It was the moment.
I mean, what was the change?
Or
you were just done. You were just done, kind of running in the wheel.
Well, when you get high and you hang out with a lot of people, they're only fun if you're high.
Right.
Or if you're going to be hanging out in a club with people who drink, it's only fun if you drink.
Right.
It's just saying, wow, what else is there to do? Is this all there is? This can't be all there is to do. There has to be more fun to it. And I'm not preaching that, you know, I don't have fun and I don't party and I don't let my hair down, because I totally do. But at the time I was doing it.
It was
because
your mission
in
life.
Yeah, it was
kind of your,
it really
your
was.
Mantra.
It
so
really
to speak.
Was. It was the thing to do. And then realizing that, and you know, I had a real tricky relationship. Now we're getting later in the chronology. I had a real tricky relationship up until about 24, 25. And he was, the two of us together, we did a lot of hard living.
Yeah.
And he was older than me, so we did a lot of hard living together. And it was one day I got sick. I got hepatitis B.
Yeah.
And I realized that I gave this to myself.
Yeah.
And thank God it wasn't HIV.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then that was sort of the, oh, it's time to think about what's going on. And, you know, I don't think I've ever talked about this even on my blog, but to all of you listening out there, if you are, I have to just do a little PS there right now, that if you are not immunized against hepatitis A and hepatitis B, go do it now.
Yeah.
Because you will get it.
Yeah.
You will get it, unless you like wrap yourself in saran wrap and don't ever touch anyone directly. But
yeah.
you will get it. It will happen to you.
Yeah.
And you don't want it to happen to you. Trust me. I was blessed to have a homeopath who took good care of me, and I got through it in about 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Most people, it takes months. But
I was because I was working in an office that we all had
right.
to get
so
in
you
a
had
medical
to get,
office.
Yeah, you had
so
to,
we all
you
had
to get it
immunized.
Done. But that was kind of the wake up call to say, hey, I gotta get my ducks in a row here, and I gotta figure out something to do in this community. And then that led me to, oh, wow, well, I just need to tell people that there's more to life than all this stuff.
So is that when you started getting politically active, and what kind of turned
well,
your,
I
mean, I don't know if I'd say politically active, but I would say that's when you got active in the community as opposed to just being a playa in the
community.
Well,
yeah, that's when I spied with my little eye these little magic books that everyone picked up every week.
Yeah.
And that everyone looked in, and that everyone read, and that everyone always was consuming over and over and over again. One of the things gay people are doing that do fabulously is they consume gay media like it's I'm going out of style, like it's steak in a piranha tank.
Yeah.
They're absolutely all over it. So I was like, I need to be a part of that. And I hunted down Suki De La Croix and said, Suki, I don't like your music editor. It sucks. I can do better. And he said, oh, really, sweetie? And I whipped out an article and I handed it to him on the spot. I was prepared.
Yeah.
I told you, when I get a goal and I get it in my mind. And then, you know, that's how I got my affiliations with Windy City. And over time, I stopped writing and I started doing this. And it's always been a goal to be able to inform people in the community about positive things that happen outside of club life. And I don't mean club life in a negative way.
Not to exclude club life. Yeah, you just mean like the drone of club life.
Yeah,
I mean,
there's so much
more.
That's
not just going to clubs. I mean, we love all the clubs on Halstead.
Absolutely.
We support all of them.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I visit almost all of them too. But it's always that was how what got me to here because it meant that I needed to have this thing where I could give back because I need to tell people about the shit that I've been through and I need to tell people that, hey, it's okay. You don't have to do that. You can come over here or you can think about this.
What do you think is the most important issue in the GLBT community right now for you? Doesn't have to be
self-awareness.
Yeah.
Too many people do not look in their own mirror at anything other than how they fix their hair or how they groom their eyebrows or how they shave.
Do you want to be married?
I do.
Do you want kids?
I do, in the worst way.
Do you
I don't care what I have, a boy or a girl.
So
doesn't matter.
So what would you be looking for? What attracts you to a person? This doesn't even have to be sexually.
No.
This can just be what attracts you to people that you go, I want to be around that person.
And the funny thing is I can't define what attracts me sexually because if I look at my past, they've been all over the freaking board. So I don't even know.
I usually assume that it's something about the person that can be something you're attracted to, somebody who's a platonic friend or someone of the opposite sex for you or whatever. Like what attracts you to someone?
It's drive and passion. Drive and passion that will turn me on. I will get a hard on when someone starts talking about how they're passionate about something before anything else, probably a mental hard on.
Yeah.
But truly, I think it's drive and passion. Those two things really, if someone is driven to do something or someone is very passionate about the work that they're doing, meaning they're continuously trying to tweak it and talk about it and think about it and think about new ways to do it. That's really sexy to me.
Now, if you can't say what you would be attracted to in somebody physically, what are qualities that today at your age now that you would say would be essential to you and a partner?
Qualities physical or, I mean, I love black hair, blue eyes. That'll just knock me over in a heartbeat.
But I mean qualities, like what do you really like? I can't imagine you being with anybody who's not intelligent. I would think intelligence would be big to you because unless you just want to be the smartest one in the room.
No. But let me say it like this, right? You know, when you're at a party and you're at a party, say of about 30 or 40 different people, and there's a bunch of different groups in that party. And there's the group who are very serious and they're talking very seriously. And then there's a group who are laughing mixed with questioning. And there's a lot of people chattering in that group.
Yeah.
He's in that chattery group somewhere.
Yeah.
He's not in the serious group. He's not in the drunkards in the kitchen, just tanking up to everything. Although I've been known to black out. It has happened. I am not perfect. But he's in that group of people who is interested in engaging in conversation, who is interested in talking, who is interested in exploring new ideas, and who's not dogmatic in the way he thinks. Because so many people in the queer community, again, they can't look in the mirror other than to think about what they're going to do with their hair. Yeah. And their hair has to be this way and their clothes have to be that way.
Yeah.
So he has to be that thing. And he also has to be versatile because I can't just fuck you for the rest of my life. You got to give it back. I mean, I like a full inning. You have to be able to pitch and catch.
Yeah.
So we have to be able to do both sides of that. So that is actually a physical thing. That is one thing that some people are like, I'm a top or I'm a bottom. See ya.
Yeah.
You can be hot and you can melt my mind, but if you can't fuck me in my ass and take it from me, bye. Yeah.
There you go.
That's dirty.
Wow. That's another bumper sticker. So many bumper stickers. All right. These are all favorites. All right.
Oh, yay.
And just whatever comes to your mind. Favorite writers? Favorite writer?
Sue Grafton. Anything mystery. Basically Leonard Cohen. And anything old and British.
What about
Agatha Christie?
Yeah.
And all that stuff.
Favorite singers?
If she has more than a triple D, I'm basically on her team. I tend to, at the top of the list, Dorothy Love Coates. She's an old school gospel singer.
You've given me some of her stuff.
And second on that list are the Clark sisters, who are the foundation for all of the new gospel. That you hear anything that's not Dorothy Love Coates, basically the Clark sisters did or had their hand in. And a lot of different Japanese enka singers because it's Kaji Mieko. She's a wonderful singer. And anything old and Brazilian. So Caetano Veloso, Jorge Bem, the original Anastasia, not the one you know now.
I'm gonna have to Google everybody you're talking about.
You're talking to me about music, so I get real eclectic. Morning becomes eclectic right here.
What was your first concert?
I went to the opera before I went to a concert.
But what was your first concert? Do you remember? Or at least when you remember?
Maybe Nana Mouskouri somewhere. A Greek. She's a Greek singer.
Yeah. And do you know, what was your favorite concert you ever went to? The one that you said, if I could just go sit there again.
Definitely. Lucy Pearl at the House of Blues.
Ah.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Favorite time of day? Morning, afternoon, night?
I love them all so much.
Okay.
Because I'm a morning person and a night person.
You are. What is your favorite smell?
Something herbally, like rosemary.
Mm. Favorite food? Is that just too hard?
Can you
I'm
give
so
me a
hungry
continent?
Right now.
Can you give me a continent or
a
culture?
A continent.
No, comfort food to me is Greek food. So
yeah.
Favorite, comfort food.
But what is your favorite sushi? You're Japanese.
Tuna, nice fatty.
Spicy, fatty.
But no. Nice. I don't want anything. I don't even want any rice. I want a sashimi style. I want nice, fatty, buttery tasting raw fish.
There you go. And on an island, I want you to name the three CDs that you'd want to have with you.
The three CDs that I want to be.
That would kind of be the enough of a songbook of your life that you would could listen to them on, you know, if you were on Lost on a stranded island. This is so hard for you.
This is so difficult. This is so difficult.
There is no right answer. It's just for today. Tomorrow it might change.
I'm cracking open my iTunes because I have to make sure I don't forget anything because my iPod is virtually on random all the time. So definitely there's an album by the Clark Sisters called You Brought the Sunshine that I probably couldn't live without.
Yep.
That's one. Absolutely. I'd need something jazzy. So I need some Jimmy Smith, Hammond B3 music.
Yeah.
So that's two. Oh, and I need something with a lot of rock in it. So it'd have to be like, like an early Stone Temple Pilots album.
There you go.
So gospel, jazz, and rock.
All right. To sum this all up, because we're just got a couple more minutes here. What do you today being the day that we're recording this, mm-hmm. what do you think today is your purpose in life?
I think to help people learn new things about themselves. I think it's important. I think it's important because we think that knowledge is in books and we think that knowledge is in the next person or in the TV or in a movie or on the internet or on the next page or at the next bus stop or around the next corner. But knowledge doesn't come from outside. Knowledge comes inside. Everything outside helps you learn. So I think that's my goal. That's always been my goal, is to help people learn more about themselves and learn more by themselves. That's what you should do. You should be empowered.
And do you have a bad habit? I always like to end on something like that.
A bad habit. I have lots of bad habits. I do. I have.
You're so insanely organized, and so
I'm insanely organized. And have you looked around the studio at how disgusting it is in here?
Well, we're not organized in here, but that's all right.
But it's organized out there. I think one of my worst habits is always wanting to tell an anecdote for any little story that people come up with. I'm a storyteller. So someone says, "Oh, the other day I was eating butter." I was like, "Oh yeah, I know when I had butter the last time. Let me tell you the story." And it's not good.
Cause just replace my name with that exact same statement. Cause I got a story for everything.
Absolutely.
Too. This is why we have radio shows. This is why we have a podcast.
So we have banter at the beginning
That's
of the
right.
show, right? It works.
So we can get it all out. We get
it
paid
works.
To get it all
we
out.
We do.
And I was going to ask you one other thing, and this one was just off the top of my head, but,
9 inches. No, I'm kidding.
Touche. I wanted to ask you if you weren't doing this, and you seem to usually be to me someone who's doing exactly what you want to do, at almost all times. But if there is some thing that you could be doing, I don't know if it would be career-wise or just or not. Is there somewhere else you'd rather be, something else you'd rather be doing right now?
I'd rather not work and raise kids.
You'd rather raise kids?
I'd rather be raising children right now.
And not working.
And not working. I think I got a lot more learning to do before I get there, but
yep.
But that right now, the predicate to that would be that I'd have to be in a relationship where somebody was making the money.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I'd want to stay home and raise the babies.
Oh, look at that. Mama Maverick here.
Yeah, basically.
On the Windy City Crickhouse Intimate Portrait. Well, Peter, thank you.
Yay.
You haven't skirted any question that I asked.
No, because it's, you know, my life is, I mean, you've seen my website.
Yeah.
It's an open book.
You're an book, open book. Basically. But I am glad to be in the book with you and writing the chapters week by week. So if you want to know more about Peter Maverick, I encourage you to go to radiopeter.com or, of course, just keep listening to the Queercast because Peter and I try to talk openly and honestly about our lives every show. And so stay tuned and we'll be back. We'll be back next week.
And thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This show is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light, always worth it.
And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Broadway in Chicago, for the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com.
So that's our show. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick. Please comment on our shows on our website and in iTunes.
The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it.
Windy City Queercast, queer and now.
The best and the brightest, served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Pod Show and Limelight.